You're listening to 3 and 30 Takeaways for Moms, episode 38. How to get your teenagers to talk to you, and it starts when they're little. Welcome to 3 and 30, a podcast for moms who want to create more meaning in motherhood. Each 30-minute episode will feature three doable takeaways for you to try at home with your family this week. I'm your host, Rachel Nielsen. Thank you so much for being here. I'm in the hands-on, kind of exhausting phase of motherhood where I have little children. I have two kids, one who's six and one who's three, and I hope to have more kids. And so they still really need me and want me. And sometimes that can feel really overwhelming. But then I talk to my friends who have older children, preteens or teenagers, and I realize that this phase of my life where I can solve my kids' problems really is such a charmed moment in time because my friends have teenagers who are facing really big, really serious struggles, some of them, and they won't talk to their parents about it. Or even those who aren't facing major things, they're just kind of going through these phases. They're figuring themselves out and they're pushing their parents away. And as a mom whose kids think I am just the greatest right now, it's kind of heartbreaking for me to think about that in just a few years, they're not going to want to hang out with me every second. And that does give me a little bit of perspective. Today on the podcast, I have an expert guest who's going to teach us about how to maintain really positive relationships with our teenagers. And it's things that we can start when they're little and that will help when they're teenagers, or it's things that we can tweak and start doing when they're teenagers that will hopefully help us repair and continue to build and strengthen our relationships. The guest is Tony Overbay, who you may recognize because he's already been on this podcast once before in episode 26. He taught us how to praise our children when it feels like there's nothing to praise. And that was a very successful, popular episode. He's so warm and fun and knowledgeable. He has a podcast called The Virtual Couch, and he is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California with a big, busy private practice and does a lot of work with teenagers. So I'm so excited for him to teach us today. Here's my interview with Tony Overbay. Tony, welcome back to 3 and 30 Podcast.
Hey, Rachel, it is so good to be back. I mean, it feels like it was only yesterday that I was on the show.
I know. And we have had so much great feedback on your first episode, which if listeners missed that, it was about how to praise your children when it feels like there's nothing to praise, which is such a cool topic. And I'm so excited for you to record the second one today.
Yeah.
How to get your teenagers to talk to you. And it starts when they're little. I wanted to add that second part because it's not like you can just, when once they're teenagers, they'll talk to you, you know? So all of these principles, we will be talking about teenagers, but all of these principles really apply and need to start with, as young as possible, you know, wouldn't you? Would you
yeah,
say
absolutely.
That? Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, you have your own teenagers, your kids are 14, 16, 18, and 20.
Exactly.
But then you also end up with a lot of teenagers in your office, I'd imagine. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And I don't think I shared this last time, but you know, I did 10 years in a different career. I was in the software industry and wasn't really kind of feeling it. And I always felt, I really did feel kind of a calling to work with men in therapy and go back to school, become a therapist. And so I did. And it was funny, in grad school, I would usually, people would say, hey, why are you here? What's your passion? And I would say this, I want to work with men. And then the instructor would typically laugh and I wouldn't know what that laugh was about. And then it was this concept where then I find out guys don't typically come into therapy and unless they're, you know, it's working in the realm of maybe an addiction or couples therapy. And so, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of those male clients that I felt called to work with, but I started noticing an opportunity to work with teenagers. And in particular, at first it was a lot of teenage boys. Mm. And I just started to really embrace that and look at, okay, maybe here's part of that call is to help teenage boys and teenagers in general have a voice. And then the more I start digging in there, and this is going to sound super judgmental to parents, but I started finding that it wasn't so much that I could, you know, quote, fix the kid, but it was more about what that interaction, the communication, you know, was with parents. Mm. And I found myself really wanting to do a lot of parent training and parent coaching and doing a lot more kind of empathy work with my teenage clients.
With their parents. The parents.
Exactly. And so, and I think I kind of mentioned this on the last podcast when we were talking about the nurtured heart approach, because this is, again, this is kind of one of these key concepts, I think, is that I started noticing that the teenagers that were coming into my office weren't ones who had said to their parents, hey, I think I really need to talk to somebody. And I will say there were one or two, but I mean, really that few out of, you know, at this point, hundreds of teenage clients I had worked with. And typically it was parents saying, hey, fix my kid. We don't know what else to do with them. Fix them. So I would get a kid that would come in and they would just not be happy to be in my office. And I was, you know, I would typically say, hey, just want to let you know, I don't really have a magic wand or magic beans or anything. They're going to all of a sudden help you know exactly what to do. So I just want to kind of spend some time and we've got 50 minutes here. Let's just talk. And then I start noticing that, okay, if they didn't feel like I was trying to fix them, that was a good thing. Mm. But then I started latching onto this concept of, hey, you know, to the teenager, have your parents ever said to you, hey, buddy, you can come talk to me about anything? And then it's like, okay, again, I'm not a black and white thinking all or nothing guy typically, but I want to say every teenager ever in the world would then kind of raise their head up and say, oh yeah, I've heard that one. And then it would be, okay, what's happened when you wreck the car or, you know, get a bad grade or, I don't know, break curfew or that sort of thing. And then it's, oh, my parents flip out. And so then it's kind of this, again, it was like this light bulb that just came on in me that was saying, okay, teenager now has to control the flow of information because they've been told they can come to their parent with anything. But then when they do come to their parent with something parent doesn't want to hear, then parent flips out, and then teenager now withdraws, isolates, and then parent now we're off, you know, with the kind of dysfunctional relationship. Mm. Parent feeling like they can't communicate with the kid, and kid feeling like they can't communicate with their parent, even though parent's saying, I'm here for you. Why don't you come to me? And then teenager saying, oh, I'm not falling for that one again.
Right.
So that was kind of the pattern I started to see. And so that's where then that kind of led to, oh, there were so many things going on, Rachel, that was kind of cool. So at that point, you know, I'm really starting to connect with this teenage population, and I had that epiphany. And then I'm doing a lot of work with addiction, in particular men and compulsive sexual behavior, pornography addiction. And I started to get – and I'm sorry if this isn't where we wanted to go with this, but I started to get really dialed into – I could do the addiction work all day, but I started noticing that a lot of the addiction work was more of a – you know, it was a symptom of a problem of, you know, not feeling connected to spouse, not feeling like a good parent, not feeling like they were in the job they wanted to do, you know, all this kind of thing.
Wow.
So that took me into, oh man, I need to kind of start working with in a couples realm. And so then normally couples therapy, most therapists aren't big fans of couples therapy because you get just a real cursory view of that in school. And you really learn this kind of fundamental concept of reflective listening, which is, you know, you sit back and when the husband says, here's my experience, and the wife, you know, you say to her, what did you hear? And she's like, well, I hear him saying this. And then, you know, therapist goes, okay, well done. You know, and then it's, and wife, you say your thing. And now I get the husband to reflectively listen. Well, I hear she's saying this. And I go, way to go. And now you sit back and go, all right, now you guys fix it. You both heard each other. And that is so brutal because you start playing this role of a referee. Mm. I promise I'm going to like come back to the point here.
No, I think this all ties in.
Okay, good. So then I start doing a deep dive into marriage, you know, kind of marriage counseling. And what I was looking for, an evidence-based, you know, modality that I could work from, that I could train in, that I felt like I could implement that would be more than just, so what do you think? What do you think? What do you hear? What do you hear? Now compromise. And I just was drawn to this technique called EFT, which stands for emotionally focused therapy. And it's by a Canadian psychologist named Sue Johnson. And it's a big thing now. I think she started it maybe 15, 20 years ago. And it's really based on attachment like attachment disorder or attachment wounds that we have. So we kind of start out in life and we want to form these solid connections, these secure attachments with people. And then we kind of, you know, and at first that's our moms or our dads, and they're there and they feed us and they wipe our bottoms and they, you know, clean up our messes and that sort of thing. So we feel like this secure attachment. We're basically, they're there for us. They love us. They care for us. Mm-hmm. So then we get into adolescence and now here we go. Now we're in the jungles and we, you know, we're not really sure if we try to form a close attachment with somebody and then they maybe bully us, or we try to reach out to somebody else and they don't have the same interests as us. Now we start to be a little bit more reserved with how vulnerable am I going to be? Then we move out into the teenage years. And now, I mean, it's just a, you know, I don't know, it's a war zone there where, you know, heaven forbid we get really vulnerable with the wrong person. And now they're, especially in today, and now there's going to be some social media posting about something or somebody taking a picture of something or, you know, so then we really start to kind of isolate. So then, because it's hard to feel safe or connected or secure, you know, secure attachments to people. And so then we get into relationships, and now all of a sudden, let's just say we're married. And now at this point, you know, we don't want to be too vulnerable or open, because now there's this fear that, well, this person will leave too, because they didn't sign up for, you know, I think about when I'm working with guys, if a guy, most man brain says, if I'm going to get emotional, then my wife's going to say, oh, I didn't want that guy. You know, I'm going to run away. I'm out of here. So then guy bottles up emotions, which is never helpful. And anyway, so I, you know, yeah. So this is like, so this EFT kind of addresses that.
Okay. So it, what it really sounds like is you have a passion for like getting to the root of these issues that, you know, end up with adults in counseling with serious problems with addiction and different things.
Yeah.
Really, down at the root, it's about attachment and good communication.
Yes.
That starts, can start in our homes. Like, we can talk to our children in a way and teach them how to communicate in a way that will help them to have healthier relationships their whole lives. Is that true?
Oh, man, so much. I'm glad you kind of jumped in there, because I was going, right?
So would you say that that is, that the first takeaway is what you talked about initially, about having that honest communication with our teenagers where we're not going to flip out when they tell us something, and to actually mean that, that they can talk to us about anything and we will react calmly. Is
yeah.
that your first takeaway for how to get your teenagers to talk to you?
Yeah, and I like the way you put that, because it really, it can't just be a, hey, here's a suggestion. It is an active process. It takes work. And here's where I'll throw a 10-second plug in for, you know, I'm a big fan of doing, people call it thought work. I'm a big fan of mindfulness. I mean, it's learning how to not react in that moment. Mm. And I feel like that's super important. I'm glad you put that there. So
you do want, you may want to react
absolutely.
When your kid comes
yeah.
tells you that they're having sex or that they're whatever it might be. Of course you want to react.
Of course, you're human.
But what do you do?
Yeah, so you're human. And I mean, that's the thing I love about this. You're gonna have those emotions, because that's kind of how you, that's your experiences in life, and you wanna be a good parent, and you've already been through things and all those things that then we start to lecture our kids about. But if we jump right in there with that, then they're just shutting down, because then it's like they just said something and then we just went ahead and shut them down, because I already know, I've been there, buddy. I know what's going on. And it's like, no, listen, you know, listen to them. Pause, turn off that fixing and judgment brain, and yeah, just kind of learn how to not, you know, to how learn how to not overreact. Yes.
Yeah. It's like practicing having a poker face.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
they, you know, when my oldest was two, he was playing with a friend and I was chatting with the mom, and after about 20 minutes, we realized we hadn't heard the kids for a while, two, maybe three. And we went upstairs and the door was locked, bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
And we knocked and said, what are you guys doing in there? And they said, we're playing doctor.
Oh.
And I was so glad that that door was there. Like,
yeah.
So we had this door and we looked at each other and she was like, what? And I'm like, whatever we see, like, stay calm. Like, we had
yeah.
this chance to, I'm like, they're little children, like, stay calm, act like it's not a huge deal, and we'll talk to him, you know. And so then we had him open the door, and sure enough, we needed to have some conversations about some things. But I was so grateful that my friend and I had a chance
yeah.
to decide what we were going to do. And so it's almost like, in any scenario, imagine like you have that door, that closed door moment where you're like, go blank for a second
yep.
and remain calm, and then open the door and talk to your kid.
You know, I like that. And maybe I've never actually said this one. I just thought of this one on the fly here. But I know when I get a chance to speak a lot, and I love that. And I'll always open the floor for questions at the end. And I love that part. And sometimes somebody will ask a question and I do need a moment to pause. But, you know, I think there's that still part of me that wants to look like I'm in control of the situation. And there's this, you know, there's this technique of, hey, that's a great question. And I'm really glad you asked that one. I mean, sometimes that's enough of a pause to kind of gather your thoughts. I almost feel like in a parenting moment, because I think I do this with my own kids, even though I've been doing this for a long time and I feel like I'm well practiced at it. But a lot of times, because I was thinking about this last night, driving home from a game with one of my daughters, we were in a pretty long drive, and she's kind of sharing some things, which I love. And one of the things I was like, hey, you know what? I just want to say I'm really glad that you feel like you can say this to me. Well, on the inside, I'm like, oh boy, all right. Got a rally, you know, get ready, no fixing and judgment.
But you kind of had like that planned response.
Yeah, so I was like, man, I'm so glad you feel like you can talk to me about this. Yeah, so
right.
I know I like what that's the door. I like that, the door approach. Yeah.
So I have a little scenario for you.
Okay.
And if you don't feel comfortable, if this is like too therapist-y and you don't want to get specific with the scenario, I can always cut this out.
Rachel, this is what I do. You got me all excited now.
So when I was a young teenager, I vividly remember this because it was so unusual. My older sister, who was going through a bit of a rebellious phase, but she wasn't so much rebellious as her friends were.
Yeah.
And she brought home her friend who was drunk to our house.
Yeah.
And that was like, whoa, because I'd never like seen anything like that. And my parents are very like, we come from religious background where we don't drink, excuse me. And she said to my parents, you said I could always come here. Like you said that I could trust you. And she wasn't willing to go home.
Yeah.
Like she wasn't willing to go home. She wasn't willing to call her parents, and it wasn't safe for me to leave her there.
Yeah.
Like I needed to bring her home. And at the time, of course, my parents were like, of course, like let's put her in a bed. You know, but I'm thinking, I don't know what my parents ended up doing, but what, as a parent, should you do there?
Yeah.
Like, because my sister was trusting them, but they also, there's like a parental pact.
Absolutely.
Almost like,
yeah.
Of like, what should they do so that they can get that girl the help that she needs so her parents can be in the know when they need to be, but still honor and trust my sister bringing her home in that situation.
No, that's a great, okay, now I feel like I'm pausing. Rachel, that's a great question. And I'm glad you asked that. See what I'm doing there? I'm putting some space there before I answer you. But actually that is a great question are you okay if we dig a little deeper in the world of EFT? I mean, you actually just set
yes.
this up perfectly.
Yes. So let's go. So that was our first takeaway, to invite the uncomfortable,
yes.
honest communication.
Yeah.
And then the second takeaway is more of this emotionally focused therapy
right.
that you mentioned before.
Exactly.
And so tell us about, what is EFT and how would it apply in this situation?
Okay, so I kind of gave that. I know I went a little deep there, and that kind of got us to this, you know, with the attachment theory part and all that stuff. So now we're in this world of, so EFT then, that's your sister put out what we call in the EFT world an emotional bid. So an emotional bid is, in the world of communication in general, is anything, I mean, I kind of feel like it's anything, any conversation, anything that someone puts out there on the table, some truth of theirs, or some here's what I'm thinking, or this question that they ask. And even as I'm doing it now, I've got my hands in this little cupping formation, and I'm moving them forth from my chest, because I say, we got to start looking at when somebody says, hey, here's what's going on, or here's my thought. We look at that as they're kind of showing us their heart, you know, they're being vulnerable. So now it's really important what we do with that. So if we respond with a, you know, I can't believe you just said that, or seriously, you're going to bring her into our home, or, you know, whatever, then man.
What were you doing at that party in the first place?
Absolutely. What we just did is exactly what, you know, you can come tell me anything, champ. And then it's like, but just not the stuff that I don't want to hear. So we got to look at that. Like, this is an emotional bid. This is the person saying, at the core of EFT, I mean, and if you're okay, I'm going to keep kind of throwing your sister's scenario there.
That, yeah, that's
fine. That at the core of that is saying, are you there for me? Can I count on you? Do you have my back? Do you love me? You know, those are kind of when we're putting out those emotional bids, whether it's like in a couple's relationship or we look at that, like when our teenager says something and we say, all right, I have to look at this as an emotional bid. And I fast forward. I mean, when I'm doing this work with couples or teens or whoever, sometimes people will say, I mean, really, do I have to look at everything as an emotional bid? And I say, yes. I mean, absolutely, because it's important. We want to know why something, you know, someone is kind of saying something or putting that out there. So when somebody puts out their emotional bid, then we immediately, and now with the way most conversations go, is we don't even realize when we do the fixing and judgment. But fixing and judgment statements come in a lot of different ways. They can be passive aggressive. They can be sighs. They can be eye rolls. You know, all of those things are judgment statements, kind of saying, I can't believe you think that, you know? So, and those shut down communication. They attack that vulnerability of the person that has put out the emotional bid. So, you know, here's where, and I love that scenario that you gave, because yeah, we've said you can bring anybody home, you know, whatever, you know, first of all, it's going to be like, okay, yeah, tell me everything that's going on. We have to go as a parent now all in on empathy. And I'll super quick, whenever I give this talk, I like to say, remember, you know, sympathy is just saying, man, that stinks. Empathy is, and I always like to give that scenario of where, you know, you walk upon somebody and they're down in a hole, you know, they fallen in a hole in the ground, and sympathy is looking down at them and going, oh man, that is bad. Like, I feel so bad that you're down in that hole. And then you move on. Empathy is jumping down in that hole and saying, wow, you know, check this out. I'm here with you. Like, I feel this, and what can I do to help? So we have to learn how to just go all in with empathy with our kids. And so then it's like, you know, your parents are doing a good job with, hey, yeah, tell me what's going on here. If they're like, well, we were at this party and this happened and she got this, and if she goes home, her parents will, you know, kill her and this, you know, so already we're, and again, if I go back to the world of evidence-based, you know, functional brain scans, when people have this kind of this empathetic response, then they, you know, there is a part of the brain that lights up and says, oh, safety. Man, we, you know, because now they're not necessarily in like fight or flight mode. They're not flooded with adrenaline. The executive parts of their brain are, you know, engaged. So because they feel like, okay, my parents listening at least. And then parent doing good empathy work hears all of that. Now, number one, they are going to have a greater understanding. And I have a lot of parents who, you know, if I'm saying, hey, do you know what your teenager's saying? And they're like, yeah, no, I know what he means. And it's like, no, you don't. I mean, because you kind of cut this person off before you really find out what their you know, their version of reality is.
It's really listening. I mean, it's listening for a long time and listening hard and not interrupting and not, you know, it's hearing them out.
Yep. And so, and I'll give a more tangible, simple example, and then we'll kind of jump back into the one that you gave with your sister, which I really do love. One of the simplest ones I've ever given is, you know, a girl who didn't want to take honors English or, you know, some sort of English, and I'm processing it literally in my office. And then the mom immediately is, you know, hey, you're really good at English. You've done really well. You don't need to stress about it. You know, when I was a kid, I worried about it too. And then I did it and I did, you know, so emotional bid was her saying, I don't know if I can do it. And then parent jumped right into fixing mode. So, and I want to point that out because sometimes often is the case where fixing mode is not coming from a bad place. It's not a, you know, it's coming from a, no, you can do it. You know, you've got this. And then this girl, you know, gets teary eyed and I'm, you know, basically, long story short, she identifies that she has a bit of a learning disorder, you know, some dyslexia, that sort of thing, and had never said that because her mom was such a book person, English person. Mm. And so she never had said that. And then it was like, mom was, oh my gosh, why didn't you ever say, you know? And it was because I never really get to, because, you know, I know you kind of jump into this mode of, no, you can do this. And so I think that's the part. Now, here's the cool part. Jump back into your question was like, what does a parent do? So a lot of times when we get to this part of EFT, the person who is receiving the emotional bid, so the parent thinks, wait, so I just got to roll over? I mean, there's nothing I can do here. But once you have that awareness, it's going to look different. And then it becomes about the semantics of language. So then it becomes about, you're not now going to attack, but now you get to share, you know, it sounds so therapist-y, right? But you, now you share your truth. So it's, in your scenario with your parents, I can imagine them saying, man, I'm so grateful that you did feel like you can come and talk to me. And I'm glad she's here in this safe place. Here's what I worry about. You know, I worry that as a parent, I would, you know, I would be up all night if I didn't know where my daughter was. Or I worry that, you know, or you know, and there's all these phrases you get to use in EFT where it's, or here's my train of thought. You know, I worry that she will wake up in the middle of the night and not know where she is and endanger our whatever. And so you're not saying, you know, I can't believe you brought her here. This isn't safe. This isn't a good idea. I'm going to call her mom. But then when you're really good at this empathy and this EFT skills, now, you know, in theory, your sister hears your mom's concerns and or your dad's mom, you know, your parents' concerns. And now she has more understanding. And so now maybe, and again, it's not that we always have to have this perfect compromise, but maybe with that said, now, you know, your sister might understand a bit more and she's like, okay, no, I hear you. So, you know, maybe it's okay if you guys reach out, or let's just kind of give it a couple of hours and let's see what's going on, or, you know, and now it's a productive conversation. It's
not, right.
Yeah.
And I was even thinking of that specific scenario. I mean, we knew that girl well and loved that girl.
Yeah.
And so I think it would be appropriate for my mom, and probably this is what my mom said. I wasn't in the conversation, but, you know, we love her. Like, I love her and I want what's best for her. And, you know, her parents need to know. And this is why, you know. So again, it's that empathy of you're not in trouble. She's right. Not in trouble. I love both of you and I want to do what's safe. Like, my job as your parent is to keep you safe, and I want to help keep her safe.
Yeah.
You know,
but
like you said, after you diffused it.
Yep.
So like you listened first and then you can talk.
I had a, can I, I've got a one that I've been thinking about a lot lately, that I have a daughter that is, she's played a lot of different sports and track and that sort of thing. And she came to me not long ago and said that she wanted to try gymnastics. And so I think my normal reaction, my dad brain, my man brain, whatever it would have been. And at this point she was in eighth grade. And I would have said, I wanted to say, hey, you know, people that are, I mean, kind of starting now, kind of what's your goal and what's your commitment like? And I worry that you, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. I think I wanted to say all those things. I mean, those are because I don't, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money and I don't feel like you'll be committed. And, you know, starting this late in life anyway, I don't know if it's going to be very beneficial. I mean, those are the things that my automatic responses wanted to say. So, but I, you know, I practiced this EFT. I got to practice what I preach. So I said, hey, tell me more where that's coming from. And then she had this whole list of reasons why and worries about regret and you know, has just felt like she could never even bring it up and wishes she would have continued as a kid. And when I heard all that, I mean, then it was like, okay, my level of awareness and empathy for what she was going through meant so much. You know, I was that made more sense than just my, oh, I don't know if you'll like it. I don't know if it's a good idea, you know?
Or worse, I don't know if you'll be good at it.
Exactly.
Because you didn't start early
exactly.
enough.
Exactly. I mean, so, yes. Yeah. Thank
and you. You have to identify as a parent, like sometimes our motivations are a little off there, you know? Like,
yeah.
And if you would have said that first to her,
oh.
Why would you start now?
Yep.
Like, you're not even, you can't catch up. And imagine how much that would have crushed her down, knowing now what you know about
Absolutely.
How this had been this thing in her heart for a
long time. So the reason this has been on my mind so much is, you know, fast forward 2 years, sophomore in high school, and there's a new sport in high school called stunt. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
So no. Stunt is a combination of cheerleading and gymnastics. She was never a cheerleader and she was never in gymnastics, but in the last 2 years, she's gotten really, really good at tumbling and like really cool stuff that I wish I knew the words of like what it's called, but lots of flips and twists and turns that are really neat. And so this stunt sport, I mean, somebody will have to go Google it, but it's like they have quarters and they play teams and it's a great, just a, you know, it's a woman's sport right now. And there's even stunt in college and scholarships and this sort of thing. And so
Cool. She
makes the stunt team because she's one of the only people that can do all of this tumbling. And, you know, now they just had an incredible season and they did really well. And even to the point where, and maybe, you know, she wouldn't want me saying this on a podcast, but it's like there's opportunities now for scholarship and to stunt in college. And so imagine if my reaction would have been, yeah, I don't think it's a good idea, or, hey, you're a little too old. I mean, it almost freaks me out to kind of go back and think, ah, what if I would have said that and shut her down, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's really powerful. I love that, those specific examples that are powerful for moms hearing this. I'm sure everyone hearing this is thinking of their own kids and situations that apply regardless of their age.
Yeah.
Where you can apply these principles. So we are about out of time, yes. But we gave them four takeaways in our last podcast. So I think we can just give them two in this podcast, the two that we just did.
Well, I could do 30 seconds. I give you two and a half.
Okay, do it.
So the last thing that I would have was just basically, you know, feeding the positive. And I think that if you do go back and listen to the last podcast we did together, this nurtured heart approach, and, you know, I think that one of the things we didn't talk a lot about there, but I think is really important with teenagers is, you know, when you had a good positive interaction, I think it's important to go back every, you know, you can go back in 3 days or 5 days or a week and just say, hey, you know what? I really appreciate the way you opened up to me a week or two ago. And I've been thinking about that a lot. And that really means a lot to me. Because, you know, I want to keep that positive energy flowing. And I think a lot of times, we'll think those things about, man, that was really nice that we had this conversation. And we're continuing to fuel that positive or feed that positive. So I think that's something to kind of, keep in mind as well, that it's okay to go back and say, hey, I really appreciate our conversation last week. You know, I've been thinking a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And it also acknowledges to them, like, I'm still thinking about you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Which like is, that.
Something that I talked about in other podcast episodes is the importance of following up, like with our kids and our friends, like when we know, when they come to us with something they're concerned about or even something that they're excited about, to not just move on and forget about it, but to follow up and say, hey, I'm still thinking about that. Thank you for sharing. Or how are you doing? Are you okay? Whatever. Following up on that conversation.
Beautiful.
So I think that's really important.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, so what, recap for us, what are three ways that we can get our teenagers to talk to us, starting when they're little kids even?
So remember the inviting, uncomfortable, honest communication, and that is in that context of you can come and tell me anything. If you're going to say that, then as parents, we need to work on the skills to be able to truly allow our kids to come and tell us anything.
Okay.
Yeah. The second one is then it's this whole emotionally focused therapy or EFT concept of really going all in on empathy. And empathy is wanting to just, I want to hear everything about why my teen is presenting me with this emotional bid, why they are sharing this information with me. And I'm going to turn off my fixing and judgment brain because I want to hear this.
And yeah. I loved the script you said there. I wrote it down while you were talking. Tell me where this is coming from. I think that is a great line to use if your kid's upset, if they want to try something new, whatever it is, to just say, tell me what you're thinking or tell me where this is coming from, and then listening with empathy.
Yeah, perfect. And then number three, feed the positive, not the negative. And then I like what you said is follow-up. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks for coming on a second time and tell us what resources you offer. And I feel like particularly your resource for pornography, which in this episode about teenagers, I think is maybe even more pertinent because this is a problem that more and more teenagers are facing in our generation.
TonyOverbay.com. And there, linked to my podcast, you can sign up for programs on couples and parenting and that sort of thing. But I have a program called The Path Back, which is an online pornography addiction recovery program. And you just said something just very, very profound. And I love there where, again, we could do a whole episode on that, Rachel, where, you know, that you can talk to me about anything is what, you know, we need to have the ability to talk with our kids about things like pornography and not have them feel like the guilt and shame that comes with that. So they can come to us so that we can be a resource for them and provide them with help. And that's one area where I feel like a lot of times the parent's reaction or the anticipation of what that reaction will be does keep a teenager from asking for help.
Getting help.
And then that leads to isolation, which leads to, you know, then if there's relapse and acting out again, which then leads to toxic shame where it's like, I'm such a bad person. I'll never get over this, when there are tools and resources and things out there to help. But if a teenager doesn't feel like they can be open about even a topic like that, then, you know, man, that's a place we need to really work on.
Yeah. So you have a program for that they can find on TonyOverbay.com.
Yes.
Or they can get in touch. They can get in touch with you there if they have further questions. So, okay. Thanks for being, now I'd say a regular contributor.
I love it. I'm
honored. Second episode, and maybe we'll have you back again.
Anytime.
I just love talking with you, and thanks for sharing all of your expertise with us.
Thanks for all you do. Rachel, you're doing a great, I love your podcast.
So much good stuff there with Tony. I'm grateful that he added those additional resources at the end for families, so go and check those out. And all I wanted to add at the end of this episode is to tell you that I did send out the takeaways from the month of June. So if you think you're on my email subscriber list, but you haven't seen that email yet, check your junk mailbox or your promotions tab if you're a Gmail user and look for an email from Rachel at 3and30podcast. I so appreciate all of you being here. I appreciate that you want to be better, more mindful parents. I know I do, and it is a joy to have people going through this journey alongside me. So let's have a great week this week, being good listeners, empathetic listeners, and talking with our children.